You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi there, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Vendedores luchando, el mundo transformando. Vendedores luchando, el mundo transformando.
Vendors fighting, the world transforming. Today, let's head to LA Superior Court in downtown LA, where sidewalk vendors held a rally. And you know the folks, those are the vendors who sell food from carts all over LA. Well, KCRW reporter Megan Jamerson has been at the court following a lawsuit affecting those street vendors, and she's with us right now. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Steve. Yep, you got that right. I came down for a court hearing today on a lawsuit brought by sidewalk vendors that sell things like tacos, fruit, and street dogs. They're a very visible part of LA's economy, and this lawsuit means a lot to them.
The lawsuit does, I'm sure. What is the lawsuit about?
Well, street vending became legal in the state of California 5 years ago, but there are still, these vendors have been banned from selling in the busiest parts of the city. So they sued to change that back in December. But then the city asked to have that lawsuit thrown out. Today, Judge James Chalfant ruled that the lawsuit could move forward. He said that the city did not present enough data to back up its argument that no vending zones were put into place to keep pedestrians and vendors safe.
All right. So that's the ruling. What happens next, Megan?
Both sides of this lawsuit will now move on to discovery, and they will start prepping their cases. And they'll be back in front of this judge on June 22nd.
I know, Megan, over the last few days, you've had a chance to do a little more reporting on the background of this lawsuit. So let's hear a little of what you discovered, starting with these blackout areas and why the vendors feel like they're important enough for them to want to sue the city to get to sell their foods there.
Well, the simplest way to put it is that these busy spots in the city where they're not allowed to sell anything legally are where the customers are. There are about 8 of these no vending zones in LA, and they are in areas with lots of pedestrian traffic. So think Dodgers Stadium after a baseball game or the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Now, the city's position on all this can be seen in their court filings. The city attorney's office declined to comment on this case because the litigation is ongoing, and that's very standard for them. So in their court filings, the city says the original decision to ban vending in these areas was not done, quote, carelessly or without evidence. So if you look at the ordinance, the city says that having these food carts on sidewalks creates crowding and then sort of forces people to have to step into the street to walk around. Katie McEwen is an attorney with Public Counsel, and she's on the legal team for the sidewalk vendors in this lawsuit. And she says, yes, the city made that point about safety in the ordinance, but it wasn't backed up by traffic data or pedestrian counts.
We really don't have that real data that you would hope the city would have in any situation where they were to pass an ordinance, especially when it really detrimentally affects local businesses in our city.
Another important thing to note about this lawsuit is that it's just the latest part of a statewide push to make vending on sidewalks easier. First, there was the campaign to legalize it statewide in 2018. Then, after several years, vendors successfully lobbied in Sacramento to update requirements to make licensing more streamlined and accessible. That happened last year in 2022. And now we have this lawsuit to end bans in places like the Hollywood Walk of Fame that was filed by both street vendors and 3 community groups. Just about any day of the week at Hollywood and Highland, you will find sidewalk vendors in front of landmarks like the TLC Chinese Theater.
No, it's me.
To give you an idea of just how good business can be in these areas, some of the vendors told me that they're willing to risk fines that can range anywhere from $50 to $500. Hollywood Boulevard is where Ruth Monroy usually sets up to sell street dogs, and she's one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit and has been involved in the LA street vendor campaign. She's lived in Los Angeles for 23 years, and for the last five, she's been working along this one-mile stretch of Hollywood Boulevard. And this business idea all started because her daughter was diagnosed with cancer, and she needed a bone marrow transplant, and Monroy needed to be there and have a flexible schedule to care for her. She wasn't able to do that with her job then, but as a small business owner with her food cart, she was able to do that.
Que también habemos vendedores ambulantes que estamos trabajando honradamente, duramente para sacar adelante a nuestras familias. Eso sí nos duele mucho y como lo repito, nos sentimos discriminados por eso.
She says, we feel very discriminated against, especially since we are very hardworking people and we're just trying to save up and make ends meet for our families, and that really hurts us a lot. Interestingly, Monroe told me that before the lawsuit happened, she had never received a citation for working in Hollywood. But after the lawsuit was filed in December, she says she's received dozens in the mail, and she says she can't afford to pay them. Other vendors who are part of the lawsuit, like Marlene Alvarado, told me this was also happening to her. Alvarado is also a vendor in Hollywood and a plaintiff in the case. She says the LA street vendor campaign tried to have conversations with the city to find a solution, but she says those talks didn't work, so they sued. She says now the relationship with the city feels strained.
No es una relación muy buena porque si usted me pregunta cuántos tickets.
She says, it's not a great relationship at all. If you were to ask me how many fines I have, I will tell you I have approximately 100 fines. So with that alone, you can see that it's not a great relationship. Now, those fines were accumulated over a two-year period. However, Alvarado was saying that the citations have been arriving much more frequently since the lawsuit was filed. And when her and I spoke, she didn't have the exact total of what these fines add up to, but her low-end estimate is 10 grand. Alvarado said she knew that the lawsuit would bring attention to their activity in this zone and that more fines were a potential consequence, but she says she's not at all intimidated and that as a group, they're not giving up because they know they're an important part of LA's economy and many of them pay their taxes and support their family with the money they earn here.
Y pues tenemos toda la esperanza de que vamos a ganar, porque no estamos peleando algo que sea injusto. Estamos peleando algo justo, estamos diciendo, hey, hablen con nosotros, siéntense a trabajar con nosotros. Nosotros no estamos diciendo que, hey, déjanos poner.
She says, and we have high hopes that we will win because we are not asking for something that's unjust. We're not just saying, hey, just let us set up right over here. We're saying, sit down with us and make plans. Alvarado says they will keep pushing for that conversation.
That was KCRW's Megan Jamerson, who's following small business for us today as this lawsuit for the street vendors now moves forward. Well, still to come on the program, it's a troupe of the formerly incarcerated. The Actors Gang is putting on a show about penance, about redemption, about reclamation. That's yours after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. For 17 years now, the Actors Gang has been running a program called The Prison Project. It's a series of theater classes given to people both inside and recently released from California's prisons and juvenile detention facilities. Their aim is to increase empathy and understanding and help folks prepare for life beyond being behind bars. Well, beginning today, they have a new play titled Immigrant of the State, written by alumni from that program, and it's up and running over at their theater in Culver City. The co-directors of this production, Jeremy Lonka is the director of programming for the Actors Gang Prison Project, and Rich Loya is a graduate of the program. They're both co-directors again. Welcome to you both.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, Jeremy, Tell us a little more about the prison project. How many facilities are you guys in, and who are you working with? What does a class look like? Things like that.
Yeah, we're working in 14 different state institutions up and down the state. We go as far north as Susanville, up in Northern California, and down to the Mexico border, to Sentinela and Calipatria, which are down by Mexicali. And we're on 16 yards. And what we do is we specialize in Commedia dell'arte. And so for folks who aren't familiar with Commedia, it's this 15th century style of theater that's typically masked. And what we do is we take that into prisons and we teach it. We're not therapists, but what we do is we teach it as an artistic release. And the whole idea is that folks are given this art form where they're playing in this very large style of physical theater, and they're playing in four emotions: happiness, sadness, fear, and anger. And the whole idea behind it is simply to bring in theater, bring in physical theater that's improv-based. And what we find is that folks, specifically in a carceral setting, but also just, you know, myself, folks who haven't been incarcerated, also take to it. And specifically in prisons, what happens is it starts to break down racial barriers. It starts to break down gang barriers or affiliations inside the prison. And it allows folks to start to connect with each other and essentially, like you said, form empathy. And we've been doing this for over a decade now. And we're at the point now where so many of the folks that we met early on who were looking at life sentences, who were life without parole, due to what's going on in our state with resentencing, those folks are starting to get out. So now we have an alumni program over at the Actors Gang, which is all folks who are formerly incarcerated. And in terms of the programs we want to run inside prison, it's now those folks who are formerly incarcerated who are going in and doing the teaching. And that's, I mean, I met Rich back in what, 2016, Rich?
Correct.
Yeah, and now he's with us. He's a program manager, and he's one of the chief people in charge of going back in and running the program that I'm talking about.
And I would imagine that it gives you something, Rich, to look forward to, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just having brothers that I was inside with. So you heard, Jeremy, I am one of those folks who graduated from the class inside. I was formerly incarcerated. I went in fairly young. I was 16 years old, was tried as an adult in 1988. I ended up doing 30 years in prison. And if you can imagine, I became so disconnected from humanity and emotions. That was the reason why I ended up staying in so long. And so it wasn't until the Actors Gang came in, and the style that Jeremy mentioned, the style of theater, it's in a highly intense style of theater that deals with these emotions that I so long ago had detached from. And having the brothers inside with me that took the class at the same time, of the 25 members, original members of the class, 22 of us are home now. And 11 of us are part of this play that we have created, written and directing, and just it gives us so much to like continue doing the work with each other. And we know the importance of it. We know the value of it. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's like so rewarding. And at the same time, you know, you heard Jeremy mention we don't preach it's therapy, but during these scenes that we're playing out in our play, in the story, it's still healing for us because we're dealing with the emotions of it now that we should have been feeling then. And so, you know, part of that, we look forward to that. So to answer your question, yes.
The title of the play is called Immigrant of the State. Give us an inkling of what it's about. I don't want to give too much away, obviously, but what is it? What's the synopsis?
So, yeah, so most of us are like first generation. So our parents were considered illegal immigrants. Like myself, many of us were juveniles when we went in. Going in throughout the 90s and the 1990s, if you remember our governors, Pete Wilson, Gray Davis, you know, stated our scene and heard stating, if you took a life, don't even think about it. You're going to spend the rest of your life in prison. You're going to die in prison, basically. And so for decades, most of us believed that we were going to spend the rest of our life in prison. What does that mean? That means we're in prisons throughout the state. We get moved quite often, transferred, things happen, and we just get moved up and down. Like there's, I don't know, 30 prisons. And we often just get transferred, sometimes for no reason, just because an incident happened at one yard and there's room and beds open available. So they're just going to move us. And so we migrated from one prison to another throughout the state.
And that's why the I and the M are in parentheses, right?
Correct. Yep.
So it's parenthesis, I am parenthesis, migrant of the state.
You got it.
On your website, Jeremy, one member of the ensemble says he hopes audiences leave the show, quote, with an understanding that sometimes people make mistakes, but they can change, and there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. That sounds like familiar territory, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think for all of us, I think it's pretty universal in that way. And I, you know, my perspective in this particular situation is a little unique because the entire cast is formerly incarcerated, and you know, I know all of them so well. But when I started doing this work, full transparency, have never been impacted by the system, don't necessarily have that in my family. And so it was eye-opening to step into a prison for the first time and kind of see, you know, what goes on. And it's also a unique perspective to get to, like, when Rich asked me to do this a year and a half ago, that's how long they've been working on this. You know, obviously I was thrilled and, like, more than happy to step in. But what is so awesome about what they've created is just the sense of ensemble amongst the group. And so the play hits on this, and that theme of second chances is something, you know, we hear it inside prison when we're running programming, and it's something that several cast members have said they want people to walk away with. And I think, you know, the way they built out the play, it's definitely in that. But also, you know, part of that and what I'm hoping folks get is, no matter, you know, how much people know or don't know about what our system of incarceration looks like in California, there will be a lot of light shed on what that is, but it's also this spirit that the ensemble has. It's such a joy to get to be around, to show up to rehearsals with these folks. And as we were talking about earlier a little bit too, it's like Rich and I get to be on the road all the time together. So it's like, I've got to see firsthand, you know, what, you know, he's done since he's gotten out and the life that he's built. And the audiences will get a firsthand glimpse of, you know, 12 individuals and, you know, just the way they've come back into their community. And it's really beautiful, and I'm excited for people who don't know that world very well to get to see that. But also, we have started, like, folks have reached out who have seen the poster that we've kicked out that was created by somebody who's formerly incarcerated, and they identify the style having been incarcerated themselves. And so we're starting to get people reaching out that are like, oh, what is this? I recognize this art from inside, that are going to come and are excited to come too. So it's cool. There's, like, something for everybody in this piece in a lot of different ways, I feel like.
Speaking of vulnerabilities, Rich, I wonder what it was like to share your story. You spent over a year writing this, and now it's out in the world. How does that feel?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yesterday, before we had a dress rehearsal last night, and we were in the costume room waiting to come out, and it was just a sense of, I was so proud of the group and how far we've come. Because you have to understand, those of us that were inside and doing the class, we only dreamed of being able to perform it out here in society in a real theater. To have that moment happening in real time yesterday was like, oh my God, we did it. And it's been challenging, you know, to have, because we're out here now, life moves fast, and jobs, family, some have kids. And so to get everybody together has been a difficult thing. But when we are there, everybody knows and understands what this opportunity means for us, and to share our stories and to be heard, to have our voices heard, has been an amazing, and we're so grateful of this opportunity.
I would ask you, Rich, when you think about organizations, when you think about, you know, sort of the classic, those kinds of entities that try and, that are there to help people, how they look at the prison system, how they look at people who are incarcerated, and what they can do to help people find that little nugget of hope, you know, that little something to hold on to be like, I can do this. I can be this when I get out.
Things have changed because when I was going through the system, as an inmate, you can't have, you can't even have conversations with people that come in with organizations that are running these classes, just because you can be deemed as being over familiar with the staff. So if just to clear it, to make it more clear for you, as Jeremy and the team was coming in, they're considered staff, right? And so us as inmates, we can't get close to and have that kind of relationship with them, because then we are like manipulators and we are just like over familiar, and so they get uncomfortable.
They don't trust you. Is that what you're saying? They don't trust you.
Not so much the staff, but by CDCR's rules and their regulations, is we can't get close to staff because we can't build that kind of relationship with them. They're staff. I can't speak for Jeremy, but he also kept his distance with building any kind of relationship with me or any other guys that I can remember. So it wasn't until I came home, and it was a year later after being out on parole, that I, one day on a Friday afternoon, I had learned how to use my phone, my Google Maps, and I put in the Actors Gang in Culver City, which was like an hour away from me. But I said, heck, I'm going to go because I just want to go thank these people that helped me come home. So I did that. I went over to the theater unannounced, and I rang the doorbell, and lo and behold, it was Jeremy who opened the door. So from that day on, I mean, we had a conversation. He's like, what are you doing this afternoon? I'm like, nothing really. I just wanted to come thank you guys, you know? And so he's like, can I take you out to lunch? We go out to lunch, and he's asking me, we'd love to have you on board. What if there was a possibility that you can teach with us and we take you back inside? And so knowing what I knew then, it's like, they're not going to do it. They're not going to let me go back inside. Well, what if we can? What if there was a chance that we can get you back? So I said to him, sign me up. And they were able to. And so there are organizations that are in there really trying to help us, but not just help us in while we're in, also when we come home. You know, the group that we have now, it's like unheard of to have this many formerly incarcerated working for an organization. And now we've been entrusted to run a play. Like, you know, Tim Robbins was okay with you guys put something together because you guys have demonstrated and have been home. And when most of us struggle during COVID, you guys show up and play with this joy and just full of like life. And so bring it to the public, bring it to the world. And so just from going and wanting to thank Jeremy and whoever, I didn't know who was going to answer that day, but it was Jeremy. So
I just want to thank you both for coming on and telling your story. Rich Loya, a graduate of the Actors Gang Prison Project, Jeremy Lonka, director of programming, both co-directors of the new play, Immigrant of the State, playing over at the Actors Gang. Thanks to you both. We appreciate it.
We so appreciate the time.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
That's all the time we have for now. Next week, an update on an LAUSD service workers and teachers solidarity strike and what it means for the district. The strike expected to go on for 3 days next week. It would be the largest and longest disruption, learning disruption, since the teacher strike of 2019. So we want to hear from you. How will the walkout affect your daily life? Are you scrambling for childcare? Concerned about student learning? Let us know at our website, kcrw.com. And by the way, while you're there, maybe you have a story idea from your neighborhood. We'd love to hear about it. And you can get the podcast, too. The website, again, kcrw.com/GLA. And, of course, get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search KCRW Greater LA. Juliana Mayo, Nihar Patel, Phil Richards, John Meek, Sonia Geis, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thank you for your time and your attention. Have a great Thursday night.